Recording has started.
Right. Thank you again. One moment. Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the GNSO NextGen RDS PDP Working Group call on the 25th of April, 2017 at 1600 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call as we have quite a few participants. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room, so if you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now?
This is Jim Galvin on the audio bridge.
Thank you, Jim. We'll go ahead and note that. And as a reminder to all...
Daniel here. On the audio bridge only. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Daniel.
Mike Hammer on the audio bridge.
All right. Thank you, Mike. All right. We will note everyone. And as a reminder to all participants, please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and also keep your phone and microphone on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the call over to Chuck Gomes.
Thanks, Michelle, and welcome everybody to our call today. Just a quick note on what Michelle asked there a minute ago. What we're asking for is those who are on the audio bridge only and not in Adobe so that we know you can't raise your hand. I think at least one person appears to be in Adobe and on the audio bridge. So
that would be me, yes.
Okay, thanks, Mike. I thought so. So you don't need to let us know if you're in Adobe. It's those who are not in Adobe so that we know you can't raise your hand in Adobe, and we'll expect you to speak out. So thanks. Okay. Let's go ahead and get started. We have, I think, a full agenda today as usual. Let me ask if anyone has a statement of interest update. And for Jim and Daniel, certainly if you do, just speak up and let us know. Otherwise, raise your hand in Adobe. Okay, not seeing or hearing anyone. Let's go ahead and go to agenda item 2, and let's quickly get some updates in terms of a couple items that are being worked on behind the scenes, and let's start with Susan and the CCTLD updates.
Thanks, Chuck. This is Susan Calvucci for the record. We have a list of 13 questions now for CCTLD operators and a growing list of registries we'd like to reach out to. We're trying to find the best contact at those registries to reach out individually to. And so we should have this done this week, I would think, and be ready to do the outreach. Would it be helpful to send that list of 13 questions out to the full working group at this point for review?
If they're ready to send out, Susan, I would say go ahead and do that.
Okay, we'll get I'll get that out this afternoon, and hopefully we can get some responses in the next few weeks.
Sounds good. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate you leading that effort. And let's go now to David and see where we're at on the definition of authoritative or whatever term we decide to use. David?
So I want to say I'm basically saying we failed to I think we've decided that not only is there no useful definition of authoritative bound, but the term is likely to be confusing enough that perhaps we should just not use it. The basically two issues with the term. One is confusion of the sort of technical sort of data theoretic sense of authoritative with the legal sense of authoritative. And the other was when we came to look at a technical definition of authoritative, we found that that while it is precisely defined, definitely defined all uses of the term within normal sort of IETF use referred specifically to the DNS, and the definitions for its use within the DNS were not only not useful, being too specific to the DNS, but were probably kind of actively misleading due to some quirks of the way the DNS uses the term. Rather than try and adapt those definitions to sort of extract the sense we're using, I guess the sense is that perhaps we should just avoid the term authoritative for clarity and try and find a sort of equivalent wording. My feeling is that we don't seem to have found anyone volunteer or reach consensus on equivalent wording, and my feeling is that we should sort of kick that back to the main working group anyway, because at that point the clearing up the very specific issues that we formed a small group for no longer really applies. So essentially we're going to say we failed to find a useful definition. We think there are very good reasons why it is confusing. Perhaps we're just going to kick the wording question back to the main group. I will write a message to the group going into some more detail about exactly why it's not so helpful. Thank you all.
David, this is Chuck. Let me ask you. So the three of you are recommending that we avoid using the term authoritative. Now, is it my understanding that you're going to suggest an alternative term where we might previously have been using authoritative? Is that correct?
I don't think we've come up with that, and I really think at that point, I think we can explain what we mean by the term and sort of throw it back to the main group for any suggestions about final wording. I don't think the reasons why we picked that small group we should apply. I think the reasons why we had that small group are now over, and we should for future wording, everyone should have a say in it. But I will suggest some alternate wording.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Any questions or comments on that? Note that Lisa says we still need a definition for a term to reflect the concept that the working group was trying to reflect in the purpose statement. David, you want to comment on that?
I do think we have narrowed down what sense the working group was reaching for in the purpose statement, which is to isolate that, basically that data theoretic sense. So what we're trying to get at is able to access the original source of data, right? So the repository of data, the original repository of data within the system. I've got to get the wording exactly right, but it is that database theoretic sense that we think the system was intending to use it. So there are oddities of how that works within the DNS, because the DNS system has primary and secondary name servers, both of which are authoritative. But the definitions within DNS reflect that, so that just sort of becomes unnecessarily confusing. But that's the thing we're getting at, that when we mean authoritative, we mean that there is a place within the system that is the repository of the data, and that you're able to access it directly rather than the data entirely being cached. Or the issue, part of what the discussion that we had in Copenhagen was actually trying to, in some cases, avoid committing the system. We sort of wanted to indicate that access to authoritative data was a goal, but not always a requirement. It was a requirement for that it happened, but we didn't want to constrain the. We wanted to make it clear that that was a requirement of the system, that it have a repository of data that was understood, a single repository of data that is understood to be the one sort of source, but we didn't want to jump ahead of ourselves and make requirements that would preclude some design decisions in phase two. So it's why exactly we were using the term gets a little fiddly. But again, I'm saying I think this is discussion that the whole group needs to be concerned with. So,
but you're going to send detail in writing to the list, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and then Andrew, please join in that. I see your chat. Sorry about the AC problems, but yeah, please feel free to suggest a few different formulations as well. So that would be fine. And of course, if Mike Pelage, one of the three of you that worked on this, wants to jump in at any time, he doesn't appear to be on the call today, but he's welcome to as well. And we'll discuss it as an entire group. So if that could be done this week, that would be great. Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay. All right. Let's then move ahead to agenda item 3. The change in our work plan that the leadership team put out to the group, I think that the message went out on Saturday, at least the one with the attachment that I forgot the first time. And we're going to let Lisa go over that and then entertain any questions that anyone has. So, Lisa, if you can bring up those two slides and then go over them to show people how we're changing course a little bit in terms of our work plan. Overall work plan, of course, and the charter stays the same, but our order of events will change a little bit. So, Lisa, it's all yours.
Thanks, Chuck, and this is Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. I'm going to keep the control of the slides just for a moment, and then I'll take the sync off so that you can all step back and forth between them, but I want to address the slide that's on the screen for the moment. So the first slide in this little three-slide deck you have seen before. This is actually the approach to reaching consensus in phase one that we originally discussed at our meeting in Hyderabad and is still the track that we're following, where we're deliberating on the five fundamental questions to try to provide a recommended answer to that foundational question of whether the existing WHOIS system can be tweaked to meet those fundamental requirements, or we need a next generation system in order to do that. All of this working group's agreements and recommendations regarding those fundamental questions, as well as the answer to that big foundational question, would be part of our first initial report, which is the first point at which we go for formal public comment. That doesn't mean that we can't seek informal input between now and then. Having done that and received public comments back and factored them into our work, then we would step through the rest of the questions in our charter that have to do with looking at factors such as cost, risk, and benefits through the lens of which system this working group is recommending, that is a new one or tweaks to existing WHOIS. And the whole idea is that we'd move towards actual formal consensus as we go through this series of the first, second, and then, of course, our final report for phase one, remembering that we have in this PDP three phases. After we exit phase one, if this working group recommends that a next generation system be developed and the that recommendation goes to council and we decide to move forward on defining a next generation system, only then would we go to phase two, where we have to hammer out in detail policies for a next gen system, and as well as implementation guidance and coexistence guidance. But that's not shown on this slide. So with that as the context, let me go to the second page. This is the task that we've been embroiled in for quite a while now. We have been looking at the first three charter questions, and as those of you that have been part of all of this since last fall recall, we kind of switched gears sometime last fall, I think early December, and started looking at key concepts for those first three charter questions of user purpose, users and purposes, data elements, and then privacy and data protection. And that's what we've been doing in our meeting since then, is looking at key concepts and iterating or bouncing between these three areas, the three charter questions. The change in that the leadership team concluded was necessary after our last call was that we actually stepped forward from looking at only those three questions and look at the question of access. Again, keeping our focus on thin data for now. The reason that we thought this change might be useful is that in our deliberations on users and purposes, data elements, and privacy, and if you think back to last week's call, in particular, we were looking at data elements and the purposes for each data element, we keep on hitting a stumbling block that some people feel that they can't answer the questions that are posed or agree to potential key concepts in those areas unless they know whether access will remain entirely public or whether there will be some kind of filtered, tiered, gated, however you want to, whatever term you want to apply to it, but some kinds of control to access to data elements. So what the leadership team decided might be helpful to make us be able to reach better agreement on those first three questions was actually to go ahead and let us focus for a moment on access. Again, still looking only at thin data, but look at access and try to answer that question and see if we can reach some agreement there that would allow us to then return to looking at users' purposes, data elements, and privacy. Given that agreement on whether access would remain entirely public or not. As this entire process is iterative, we're not just leaving the first three questions as they are today, but we will return to them. And then once we reach some level of consensus, a rough consensus on that, we would move forward then to looking at thick data in Task 12C. Slide here depicts that we have a first and second pass defined in our work plan. In the second pass, we would go back and look at these initial key concepts that we've been developing and will continue to develop and try to make sure that they're framed as requirements to answer those five fundamental questions to answer the foundational question. And you probably recall from our previous meeting that we set as a target that we would try to start at least preparation of that first initial report by ICANN 60 this fall. Abu Dhabi. So now I'll move to the third slide. I'm going to take synchronization off in case you wish to scroll through the deck yourself. The third slide actually lays out some target dates for all of those steps in order to get us from where we are today, deliberating on the first three questions in Task 12A, moving us through the summer so that by the time that we meet in Johannesburg at ICANN 59, possibly we could be ready to start looking at key concepts for access to thick data. We believe that that would be a very effective use of our face-to-face meeting, since we think that will be a really challenging question for us to try to address. And then use the summer for our second pass, going through the key concepts that we developed thus far and try to harden them into some draft requirements that would allow us to begin deliberating on that foundational question in advance of our ICANN 60 meeting. So that's the rough timeline that we came out with in order to try to get us to the place where we're ready to at least draft that first initial report by the time that we get to ICANN 60. And I'll turn it back to you now, Chuck.
Thanks, Lisa. And I'm going to open it up for questions. Before I do that, let me point out then that we would move to step 12B after we finish discussing this change today. So in our meeting today, we would start working on the gated access questions. So please be aware of that. Now let me open it up for any questions or comments. Mark, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. It's Mark Anderson. First, let me, give my appreciation to the leadership team for all the time and thought they've put into this. I do agree that, we keep stumbling on, this problem of, collection without talking about access, and that does seem to be a stumbling point. But I can't help thinking that we're going to run into the same problem with thin versus thick. I'm not sure, that I'm advocating for one way or the other, but I'm concerned that constraining ourselves to thin data, only thin data now, we're gonna run into the same problem we ran into before with collection versus access only. I think the approach is, the approach of talking about access now makes sense. I'm just not sure it makes sense to tackle just thin data now. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. It's Chuck. And you may be right. We actually talked about that a little bit as a leadership team. And the approach we decided was, if we find that that happens, we can expand the thick data sooner. So let's see how it goes. And if we see that we're stumbling because of that, we can adjust. But thanks for the comments. Theo, your turn.
Thanks, Chuck. I'm sort of disagreeing with Mark here. Some good suggestions there still, though, but I think the approach is pretty good. Let's use the approach for thin data, see where we go from there, and get some more insight on the whole gated stuff. I think that's where most of us are struggling. The further we get ahead on the gated access stuff, the more you get a whole picture of where everything is going to fit there. It's going to be like a puzzle, nearing some phase of completion there. And I think it will be easier for the people on the working group to comprehend which goes where and how eventually it might be going to look like. And when it comes to the question of thin data or thick data, I think that's a matter of where it's going to be stored eventually. And that is a different discussion. So I'm not too worried about that. So I think let's use this approach, see how far we get. Thanks.
Thanks, Theo. And I don't know if Lisa, and this is Chuck, I don't know if Lisa or I pointed out, I think I did in the message that I sent out on Saturday, but the leadership team just didn't come up with this on their own. It was actually in response to quite a few comments from a lot of people over the last several weeks, both in meeting chat as well as an email and in verbal comments in our meetings the last few weeks. So we felt like this was a lot of you were commenting to about this hurdle we keep running into instead of jumping over. So it is thanks to the input from lots of you that we went this direction. Natalie, it's your turn.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm as an end user, I must say I'm quite sensitive to both sides, and I have concern about privacy and also concerns about cybersecurity sector to be able to do its job properly. I, as an end user, I'm also aware of the growing threats that we're facing today, and I don't think I would be happy to have my privacy secured knowing that all these criminals are loose. So I want to make sure that Allison's concerns are properly addressed. I feel that she says the same thing every time, and we never really deal with what she's saying. And I think it's, as far as I'm concerned, this is crucial. I would like to understand how we can accommodate her concerns, let her do her job as best as she can, and still protect privacy. And I think we might need to add another step, like a meta process. What are the rules that we should apply in order to further this conversation and go into negotiations, really, because we will be sacrificing somebody's concerns, part of it, I hope, not all of it. And I want to make sure that we have clear rules as to what we can do, what we cannot do, when we can sacrifice something in favor of something else, because they're maybe equally important. But I feel we haven't talked about this, and I like rules. I want to understand the process, and I feel that we need to discuss about a meta process. Is there a pendulum maybe within this overarching concern of trying to accommodate both privacy and cybersecurity concerns? Is there a pendulum that swings in more or less in the privacy direction and then goes back to security concerns? But is there something like that going on? And if not, I mean, I just want to understand it. I would like to have a meta process so that we can really have a negotiation and not at some point arrive to the conclusion that we need to exclude someone. And if we do need to exclude someone, at least we know why, and this is approved, because I think that's also the biggest hurdle, is that we all know nothing, we can't all have our way. But we don't talk about this, so what can we do and what can't we do? What are we willing to sacrifice and what are we willing to keep and how? That's my biggest concern.
Thanks, Natalie. This is Chuck. And I'm going to come back to you because I need to better understand what you're thinking of in terms of a meta process. You're absolutely right that we need to justify whatever decisions we make. If we make a decision to go one direction and not another, we're going to need to base that on objective information. Now, that objective information may be laws in some jurisdictions. It may be need, a legitimate need that particular interests have, whether it be for privacy or for access, and so on. So can you help me understand maybe with an example? I don't know if an example really is possible, of what you're thinking of in terms of a meta process. I think I'm in full agreement with you that we need to base whatever decisions we make on objective data and clear decisions, knowing the trade-offs. But can you help me better understand what you mean by a meta process?
the framework of discussion, how negotiation is supposed to go on, the rules of the game. When you play a game, you always have the rules beforehand, and you know exactly what you can and cannot do. And this prevents us from stalling at some point, and people maybe out of do not want to get into fights with other people because we need to establish a framework for these negotiations, because that's what it is. It's a negotiation. So I feel that we're missing the rules of engagement.
Okay. Thank you.
I mean.
Now, we do have rules of engagement in our charter, so I certainly encourage you to go back and look at those, and including how to deal with differences of opinion and so forth. So we do have that framework that's pretty well laid out. Whether that's all that you're talking about, I'm not sure. But let's listen to some others. Andrew, go ahead.
There. Let's see if Adobe Connect likes this.
You're coming through a little lightly, Andrew.
Let's see if this is any better.
That is.
okay, good. I said in the chat that I disagreed strongly about the thick versus thin remark that was made earlier, and I just, rather than trying to type it, I thought I would explain why. When you look at a given data element, what you want to know is why it's collected. And, of course, why it's collected is partly bound up with, you know, what you want to do with it later. And so the objections that people have been making that they can't answer the question about whether whether a data point should be collected or by whom because they don't know how it's going to be used later is a legitimate one, in that it's part of the reasons why you collect it. But the thick versus thin discussion is actually about which data elements we collect and who gets to see them. And so it's possible for us to have a generic discussion about whether there is gated access and what it would look like before we tackle the problem of which data elements precisely we're going to collect. And I think the reason to handle the thin ones all in one go at the beginning here is because we seem to have, at least from my point of view, we seem to have converged on the idea that almost all of the stuff that we've been talking about is thin, maybe all of the stuff, but if not all of it, then almost all of it, is necessary for the functioning of the system at all. And if any of them don't work, if any of them aren't allowed to be collected, then in fact we don't have a system and we can all go home. So I think that this is a legitimate distinction to make, and also I think that it's the right way to go. So I approve of this step. But that's the reason that I think the thick versus thin discussion can be saved till later. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. This is Chuck again. Mike, go ahead.
Thank you. This is Michael Hammer. I'm going to state something that may sound a bit aggressive to some folks, but I hope that it provokes some deep thinking. I'm a security and anti-abuse guy, and there have been discussions of a day without security. And I'd like people to think about the implications. It's already difficult enough to fight abuse, and in many quarters there's a sense that we're losing the battle. So to the extent that folks aggressively pursue the privacy perspective through either not having information or gating it, it may make folks in the security and anti-abuse community really question what are they doing? Why are they fighting this fight? Because for many of us, it's not simply about money. That's all I have to say.
So, Michael, this is Chuck. I have a question for you. Would you agree with me that in various jurisdictions around the world, there are laws, regulations that require privacy of data and protection of data.
Oh, I absolutely get that, but I also understand that when things hit the fan, many of the same people who are advocating these laws are the first ones to say, make the pain go away. They want their cake and they want to eat it too.
So I doubt, this is Chuck again, I doubt that there's anybody in our group, I'd like to think there's no one in our group that doesn't strongly advocate for security. So I think we're on the same page there, all of us, I hope. But we do run into conflicts. And what our task is to see how we deal with those conflicts and provide the best security possible while at the same time allowing people from different jurisdictions to comply with local laws. So that's what we have to do.
So I'll jump in with another point, which is it's quite easy. I won't say quite easy, but you know, one of the solutions is to drop route when there's abuse. And I'm speaking as somebody who, in extreme circumstances, have cut off entire countries, and not just ones that don't really have access. So, you know, to the extent that jurisdictions put privacy ahead of security, they may find that the people that they're protecting the privacy of may not get access to resources.
And, of course, that's why we're getting into gated access right now. So let me jump ahead to Theo.
Thanks, Chuck. In response to the previous speaker, there's nobody against or in favor that abuse levels should rise. There's nobody who wants to have child abuse. I mean, we're all against it, and I'm speaking as a registrar. But as a registrar, I'm looking at this from a business perspective also. There's abuse, and I'm dealing with a lot of new regulations coming through the EU GDPR. I mean, the fines are insane. Is there going to be enforcement? Yes, there is going to be enforcement. That enforcement, we didn't have the enforcement for the last 10 years. And that is exactly the point that is where we got a sort of a free ride here when it comes to the who is as it is now. I mean, there was no enforcement. So we got very lucky there as registrars. We didn't go, we went not under the bus, but we're going to be under the bus in 2018. So this is critical for us, because if we're all going out of business, and this is not just a problem that is affecting Europe, it is affecting every registrar and registry on this globe who wants to deal with European customers. Now, we could come up with scenarios where we don't serve those regions in Europe anymore as a registrar, but that would be insane. That is economical, not feasible, and that is not within the mission of ICANN. It's a global thing, the Internet. So we've got to keep that in mind. And if you look at complying with the law, this is not something new. We've done it in China last year. I mean, there were a whole bunch of regulations which were being imposed on Chinese registrars, Chinese registries, and registries outside of China. Did we do? We got in compliance with the law. Is it going to be easy? No, it's not easy, but it's something we must do. And this is something, all these regulations are being imposed on us, and we need to do something with it. And again, we are not against abuse. We want to make sure that there's no abuse, but something has to give here, so let's explore gated access, because we need to do something here. And I think we're all on the same page as everybody, as Chuck just mentioned. Thanks.
Thanks, Theo. Chuck again. David, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to make the point. All of us understand that there is a trade-off between privacy, that it's not a direct opposition, but there are some, you know, awkward trade-offs between privacy and security. So it always in one direction. Sometimes there are ways in which we define security where having your information always public reduces it. But the main point I want to make is the argument about is there going to be privacy regulation has already been made outside this group. It has to change. We have to accommodate it. We have to make a system that is legal for Europe and other countries with strong data protection law. That we can't avoid it. The decision has been made outside this group. So any argument that says, well, those laws are bad, we should just ignore them, is not in it, or otherwise says that the privacy arguments being made here are wrong because they may have security consequences. The arguments have been made. We have to, that is part of the purpose of this group, is to make something that lives with current law. Certainly people, as some people have said, able to advocate for, to have the law changed, and I wish them well in that endeavor. Certainly some people may decide that complying with some European law may be problematic for them, and well, they're just going to not operate in some jurisdictions. But a bulk of this, I think, realize that we literally have no choice but to try and comply with the law as it exists. That is going to have some consequences on the way people do their business, and we now need to work on ways that we can accommodate it. Just arguing that the intent of having better privacy protection is problematic is not helpful. That argument has been made well outside ICANN at the European parliamentary level and so forth, and in many local jurisdictions. I don't see that arguing against compliance with laws that have already been made, essentially, serves any useful value to this specific group, which already has a lot to deal with in, just understanding what those laws are and how it affects us and of course we should have a flexible system that does not assume that the same laws apply in every jurisdiction. It's very, very understood that some of these arguments seem to be saying, well, the European laws are bad. We should, data protection law is bad. Maybe. But complying with them is what we're here to do. I find some of these arguments distracting at best. Thank you.
Thanks, David. And we're going to move on to the next agenda item now, but I want to let you know that going forward, I'm going to try to get us beyond these high theoretical levels like we've been talking for the last 15-20 minutes and force us into very specific questions that we need to find answers to. I'm also going to be more assertive when we come across terms that we can spend weeks on. We're going to eventually have to get the terms right, and I think we can. But I'm going to try to force us to look at very specific questions in our charter and to help us come to answers to the questions we have in our charter to answer. So you may find me cutting some discussions off and maybe postponing them till later, unless they're just absolutely essential and we can't make any progress. But if all of you will think back over the last several weeks, we've spent an awful lot of time and not come up with very many answers, and we need to start coming up with answers. Now, we're going to need practical examples. We're going to need situations illustrated so that we know what kind of things we need to deal with. And we have to do what Natalie said, and we're going to have to make some hard decisions based on the information that we come across. So if I'm a little less tolerant in the next few weeks and months in terms of allowing some discussions just go on and people expressing their opinions and so forth, you know, most of us have done a pretty good job so far of communicating our positions and so forth. Now we need to get down and work together collaboratively to figure out where we're going to go and what answers we're going to come up with for the questions that we have to ask. So let me let Paul talk, and then we're going to go to the next agenda item.
Hi, this is Paul Keating, for the record. I apologize very much. I like very much what you just said, and I'm new to the group, so please don't throw too many cannon shells my way. But it seems to me that we're having what we lawyers would say is a jurisdictional discussion here. There's a lot of messages in the chat that I've read. There are a lot of statements that I've heard that seem to prescribe that just because the European community, of which I'm a member, where I live, has dictated a set of rules, that the whole world has to jump up and down and comply. And we need to remember that laws are jurisdictional. And our problem that we're dealing with is we're dealing with a global beast called the Internet in a jurisdictional world, which is inherently national. And so one country can claim that its laws are going to be sacrosanct above all others, and another country can claim the same thing. But these are nothing but the same issues that everyone's forefathers fought about 300, 400, 500 years ago. We need to come to grips with whether we're going to do one of two things. We are going to either create a system that is going to comply globally with all of the rules and regulations that we know of, or we're going to create a system that complies with what we think should be the rules and regulations of the WHOIS. Okay? As to the former, I think it's an impossible decision for two reasons. One is we don't have the capacity as a working group to understand what the rules are going to be in every jurisdiction that the Internet is going to come across. And number two is all of those rules may change tomorrow. Okay, so that's very difficult to plan for that global consistency. What we could do is create our own rules of what generally we think the WHOIS system should be and why as guiding principles. Now, with that regard, we have several problems, one of which I've heard is, oh, gee whiz, I'm a registrar in Austria, and I can't possibly comply with the Austrian obligations of privacy for my clients. Okay, so my first response is, you can move from Austria. You don't have to be in Austria. You can be a registrar. You can physically locate your company in Aruba. Austria would have no control over you whatsoever. Okay. So, in other words, we need to plan what we can plan. We can't plan for everything. And although I understand the need for privacy and the conflict with security, there's a certain amount of practicality that we have to approach the problem with. We have to say to ourselves, okay, you want to register a domain name, you either need to put your information down on the WHOIS, or you have to have someone else's information down on the WHOIS who will verify your your credentials and protect your privacy. But I don't see any other alternative to what we're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Now we're moving to agenda item 4, because we could talk at these high levels forever and not get anywhere. Charter question, sub-question 5-1, is should GTLD registration thin data be entirely public, or should access be controlled? And if you express an opinion, I would ask you to briefly cite the rationale for your opinion on this. Okay, so the question is, should GTLD registration thin data be entirely public, or should access be controlled? If you're raising your hand, I'm assuming you're going to respond to that question and provide your justification. But please be brief. We have 29 people on this call plus some additional staff members, we want to give as many people a chance to speak as possible. So, David, is your hand still up to answer that question? Okay. Paul, are you going to answer that question? Give your
love
opinion.
Love to. It must be public, just as any other registry of ownership information must be public, in my opinion. We need to understand who is the ultimate beneficial owner and who is the ultimate responsible party who owns property. Okay, there are justifiable reasons for remaining private and protecting your privacy. I understand them. I get them as a lawyer all the time. But there are means of protecting that privacy which do not equate to taking the entirety of the whois record offline from a public standpoint, or placing it behind a walled garden, which is what we're really talking about in terms of gated. Thank you.
So Paul, you believe that all the thin data elements that we've been focusing on should remain public, and that any privacy that's needed can be handled through other means rather than hiding those details from public access. Is that correct?
Correct. In other words, you can have a qualified party who is serving the role of being the public front person for the record, but who knows of your credibility and knows your credentials and can essentially vouch for you for the purposes of maintaining the security aspects of the internet.
You're jumping into thick data, okay?
Sorry, but
what
I believe
talking about that, right now is thin data. We're not there's no.
But I believe that the thin data should apply to the thick data. So I believe that there should be public access to all.
Stay with our task, please.
Okay? Sorry, I'm trying.
So let's stick to thin data right now. Okay.
Correct. Okay.
Okay. And,
so you're correct.
And your position is clear. Okay. Jim,
thank you.
Go ahead. Jim, we're not hearing you. I don't know if you're on mute. Jim Galvin. Still not hearing anything. While we're waiting here, I'm about to do a quick little live meeting poll, so prepare yourself to use Adobe if you're in Adobe. Those that aren't, we'll give you other ways to speak up. But I just want to call attention to the fact that just before our meeting today, Vicki Scheckler chimed in, and she also believes that all the thin data elements should remain publicly available. So I'm just throwing that in while we're waiting for other people to jump in. And since nobody is has their hand up. How many
Excuse
of
Chuck?
You? What? Excuse me.
Hi, Chuck. I'm sorry. This is Marina Lewis. I'm on the audio bridge only, and I was actually
okay.
going to see if I could pipe in
Go
at
ahead,
some point.
Go ahead, Marina. Speak up.
Okay.
Thanks for speaking up.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks, Chuck. Real quick, I'll just say I am a proponent of having the thin data remain public. And the reason I say that is because I do draw a distinction, and I realize that we are getting into some fundamental kind of high-level stuff, so I'll keep that to a minimum. But perhaps this goes to Natalie's comment earlier about sort of rules or principles. My overarching approach to this is that I draw a distinction between those who register domain names and, say, create websites versus those who are true end users who visit websites. I am a very, very strong advocate for privacy concerns for people who use the Internet, for people who use email, who visit websites. However, I agree with Paul in this case that if you are essentially a website operator or you are a mail server operator, a domain name registrant, I believe you are more than just a user at that point. You are a creator of the Internet and the domain name system. And as a result of that, you have an obligation, like Paul said, to make your contact information known the same way you would any other participant or link in any type of infrastructure, say real property, or any other type of asset that the public uses. I mean, we forget that the Internet is, by definition, a public framework. And so I believe that if you are going to be part and parcel of that framework, your information needs to be as public as anybody else's. So that's my approach. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Marina. So we have three people, I think, agreeing so far, if we include Vicky's pre-meeting input. Andrew, you're next.
Hi there. I'm
a little weak again, Andrew.
I'm chiming in. Is this any better?
Yeah, that's better.
All right. I'm chiming in again because I'm a little bit nervous about this distinction between, like, the real end users and other people. The Internet is designed as an end-to-end system where we don't make a lot of distinctions between the kinds of participation of various participants. And what that really does is change the rules so there's a, you know, you must be this tall to ride rule. So I'm anxious that we not assume pieces of the architecture that are basically just the way the World Wide Web works today. That is not how the architecture is really supposed to work. And it so happens that it's emerged that way for the time being, but there's no reason to suppose that that's a long-term fact. For instance, imagine that the Internet, the so-called Internet of Things world, starts using domain names ubiquitously in order to identify things inside your house. Suddenly we'd have a real problem with personally identifying information on these domain names that are supposed to be just, you know, we've designed a policy for people who are running websites and so on. I don't really want people, everybody in the world, to be able to look up my name and address just because I've registered my thermostat on the Internet. So that seems to me to be something that is a little bit dangerous, and we need not to be making those kinds of distinctions. Now, all of this is nevertheless about thick data, and I think that that's the point that we were starting with before. So I think that the thin data questions are very, very limited in the kinds of data that we're talking about, and I think that we can continue to talk about those things precisely because they're not personally identifiable information, identifying. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. And, of course, we're coming back to what Mark Anderson's concern earlier. It's tough for us to just talk about thin data. Many of the comments that have been made by the last several speakers have merged into the thick data issue, and I think that's the concern Mark had. But for now, we're gonna focus on the thin data. So I'm gonna ask a question of all of you now. I'll ask the question, and I'll let Paul speak before I ask for the responses. But the question I'm gonna ask is this: I would like any of you on the call, and if you're not in Adobe, I'll ask you to speak up when we get to that point. to if you think that any of the thin data elements, notice I said thin, and we've defined that, should not be public. So I'm going to ask you in a little bit to put a red X in there. Don't do it yet. If you think that there's some thin elements that should not be public, okay? And, of course, I'm going to ask you to explain why, so be prepared to do that. Now, Paul, go ahead.
I'm going to ask a stupid question. Please remind me what do you think includes the definition of thin data?
You're not coming. I can't understand you. I don't know what's – there's some interference. Try it again.
I apologize. Can you hear me?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. So the question is, and anyone else who doesn't remember, but what is the definition that you're using very generally of thin data?
Okay. I'll ask staff to put that definition up on in Adobe. And in the meantime, Mark Anderson, go ahead.
Thanks, Chuck. It's Mark Anderson. I want to clarify. I guess are we equating gated access with saying that the data is not publicly available? Because if so, I'm not sure I agree with that. And I'm looking for it. I think somebody stated in chat earlier that, you know, they agree that it should be public. There should be some controls on it, and I think I agree with that statement. And I think there's some disagreement or some feeling that gated access means it's no longer public. I don't agree with that. I think you can have gated access. You can have controls on the data, but still have the data public. So I guess if you ask the question in the way you worded it now, I'm going to have trouble answering it.
Okay, you confused me, Mark. I believe what people mean by public is that anybody can see it. Is that not clear?
Well, so if I you have the question, if you think that any thin data elements should not be made public,
shouldn't be displayed the way they are today.
All right. So if I does that mean I agree or disagree with gated access for thin data?
Well, we'll get to the. You don't need gated access if something's publicly available. Does that make sense?
Yes and no, because I'm not sure I agree with that. So there's some data that you, for instance, some data is available in DNS, for instance, name servers, right? So,
I'm going to cut you off because I want to be more specific. We're talking about the RDS, okay?
Uh-huh.
So the issue is, are there any thin data elements, okay, that should not be publicly displayed as they are today in WHOIS in a new RDS system?
Okay.
Is that clear?
It is.
Okay. Now, whether they're available somewhere else or not, what we're talking about is the RDS right now. Okay? Is my question clearer?
Did they send a new one to the back? Okay, so I understand that you sent the same query to me.
Sounds like in the background. Is that you, Paul? I'm trying to. I don't know where that was coming from. It sounded like in an echo chamber. So now, Paul, have you? You can scroll on here for the thin data elements. Where Lisa, help me out here. Where on the screen are the? In fact, why don't you take control of the scrolling and show the list of thin data elements so that there's a very clear definition of what we're talking about.
Chuck, the document that I'm displaying there on the screen says in December 2016, the working group agreed to focus its deliberation on thin data as defined by the WHOIS report. Apologies, that just scrolled away from me.
Yeah, I was looking at what you were reading, and then it disappeared. Okay, so in that middle paragraph there, right, just above 212?
So the data set for thin data today includes the sponsoring registrar, status of the registration, creation and expiration dates, name server data, the last time the record was updated, and a link to the registrar's WHOIS service. It also includes the domain name itself. And I believe that someone copied a WHOIS record into chat as well.
Yeah, I'm way off in the chat. I haven't been I was up too high.
There you go.
That's what we're talking about. Those elements are what we're talking about for thin data. Okay? Andrew, go ahead.
Hi there. This is Andrew Sullivan again. So I think in this conversation we're conflating a couple of things, and it's important for us to make the distinction. The current WHOIS model is both it publishes a large amount of data, and that's the thick-thin distinction. And the other thing about it is that it has completely anonymous, unauthenticated access. So you know, if a WHOIS server is listening on port 43, it just replies to whatever query it gets. Gated access is about two things. It is about whether you reply at all to a given query, and whether you reply with a given data element. It has both of those qualities, because what it does is it authenticates the user, and then it says you may these are the things that such a user is allowed to retrieve. And if the user attempts to retrieve things beyond that, then it just doesn't get them. But also, if the user, for instance, attempts to retrieve more quickly than the user is supposed to retrieve, then that user will be limited in some way, like perhaps it won't get an answer or it will get an error message or whatever. And both of these are elements of gated access. And we actually have this kind of gated access today in the WHOIS. Most of the large GTLDs, at least, have a contractual provision that allows them to rate limit WHOIS access. And that rate limiting is effectively using the IP address of the source query as an authentication token, and it will only give you an answer so often within a given minute. That's a kind of gated access, and we've already got it today. So I want people to understand that this is not actually an innovation. It's just an innovation that allows us to do gated access in a more sophisticated and, in my opinion, rather more reasonable way. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. Alex, go ahead.
Thank you, Chuck. This is Alex. Yeah, so I don't disagree with Andrew there, but I think for the purposes of our conversation and for future deliberations, I think it will be helpful if we separate the concepts of gated access, which I see as gated and authorized access to data or some subset of data, and the more technical aspects of running internet services around rate limiting and the like. I think if we talk about them together as kind of one concept, it may complicate future debates. So I think both concepts are important, and we need to ensure that we take rate limiting and other services into effect, but if we separate them, I think it'll make our lives easier moving forward.
Thanks, Alex. I think you're right, and not detracting at all with the distinction that are the two examples of gated access that Andrew gave. What we're really focusing on now, and let's keep it fairly narrow, okay? Are there any of the thin data elements? And I'd like you, if you think there's one or more of the thin data elements that should not be made publicly available, and that could happen through a rate limited display. The point is, there's really no restriction on somebody getting that data other than business management things like rate limiting and things like that. So does anyone on this call, if you think that there are any thin data elements that should not be made publicly accessible in the RDS, put a red X in the Adobe, or if you're not in Adobe, please speak up and tell me who you are so I can get that. Any red X's? Let me scroll down so I can see. Because I'm going to draw a conclusion from what I see or don't see here. Okay, Mark Anderson, go ahead. You need to explain yourself. Which data elements do you think should not be publicly displayed, and why?
Thanks, Chuck. It's Mark Anderson. You know, I think I'm having a little bit of trouble with the question, you know, as you noticed earlier. But I'm not sure that unlimited anonymous public access to the Whois server, the referral URL, updated date, creation date, and expiration date are all necessary. And, you know, I'm trying to apply what we learned from data commissioners, earlier, and that, you know, collecting data, you need to have a legitimate purpose for that. And I'm not sure what that is. And, you know, you're looking at the status information. Some of that may not even be applicable for an unlimited public access model. So I'm not sure. You know, I think to go back to
Mark, you don't think that we can find a legitimate purpose for each one of those elements?
No, I've stated earlier. You know, I think you can come up with a legitimate purpose for an awful lot of things. Is that necessary for the operation of an RDS system? Is it applicable with or does it comply with applicable law? I think those things have to be answered as well. It's not just can you come up with a possible purpose for this data element. I think I could come up with a possible purpose for any data element.
Do you think that displaying any of these thin data elements breaks any laws?
I didn't say that. And that wasn't the question. You know, the question was, are any of these thin data elements ones that should not be publicly displayed?
I was following up what you said. You're the one that brought up the laws.
Okay, I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what you're asking at this point, then, Chuck.
Well, you see, we're getting into we can get so fine in terms of every little minute detail that we will never accomplish anything. Most of the people on the call seem to believe that there's not a problem with displaying these thin data elements publicly. Okay, so that anybody understanding that whoever's displaying this data will have certain things like rate limiters and things like that. So far, you're the only one that seems to be, you and Theo, so I'll let Theo speak too, think that there's a problem with displaying some of these elements publicly. So I'm just trying to press that and understand it better. I'll come back to you, Mark, let you think about that. Let's go to Theo, see what he's got to say.
Thanks, Chuck. And I'm sort of following Marx's thoughts there. I mean, it all boils down, what is the purpose? And if you look at expiration dates, creation dates, and update dates, which are available through the FinUIS, that is something you can look up at your control panel at your registrar. So there is a solution with different technical means there. So why do we publish that in public? There is no justification for it because you can already look it up at your registrar's control panel. Is it a violation of law? Doubtful. Could there be situations that there would be a violation of law? Maybe. But that is actually very hard to determine for us as a working group, unless we are extremely fluent when it comes to the GDPR and we know exactly the ins and outs. So the question is, and I'm reversing this, why would you display it in the first place if it could be a problem? Because from my point of view, there might be a purpose, and if there's a purpose, can you solve it by any technical means without displaying it in a public directory? If yes, then don't use it. That's going to make your life a whole lot easier to tackle all these issues. Thanks.
Theo, I'm gonna bear with me on this because I don't mean to be too difficult on this, but we could actually argue that we don't need WHOIS at all. And yet there are lots of needs that are met by it. So, I mean, really, there's nothing that says we have to have a WHOIS. So I could
use that one
argument and say, well, we don't really need WHOIS. Nothing written in stone that we have to have a WHOIS. So go ahead, Theo.
Thanks. And I didn't want to be very blunt or rile people up here or ruffling feathers, but if you look at the WHOIS and you ask me that question directly, do we need a WHOIS, then my answer is not really, because what we are talking about is a domain name, which is a commodity that we are all using and a lot of people are using. And if you look outside of the ICANN bubble and when you look at your smartphone subscription, can you look up a cell phone number in a public directory and see when you started with your subscription, when you upgraded it, or when you transferred it to another telephone operator? When is your subscription going to expire? No, it's not there. It doesn't exist. And there's probably a pretty good reason for it. I'm not saying that I know exactly everything when it comes to privacy laws, but there are so many countless examples outside of the ICANN silo that don't do this. And they already, these companies, they already had tons of experience with dealing with all these privacy laws. So what I think what we are doing is sort of catch up in a really compressed time frame, and that is causing a lot of friction. And we are sort of in this position now. But if you ask me, do we really need a WHOIS? I think I can use any other technical means to accomplish what everybody is trying to use. Will it be harder? Yes, absolutely. And how are we going to deal with abuse? Another good question. I don't have the answers for that, but point blank from a technical point of view, no, we don't need a WHOIS. Thanks.
Thanks, Theo. Mark, do you want to add anything?
Thanks, Chuck. I guess you know, I'm guessing you're not following along in chat, especially since it's pretty active. But I mean, Lisa sort of hit on part of what I was trying to get to.
I did see that.
So for example, you know, the WHOIS server and referral URL fields. Right, these are fields that are legacies of the thin-thick model. And if you're not operating an RDS in a thin model, then they don't really serve any purpose, and it's not necessary to have those. In fact, they don't. Not only is it is it not necessary? It's extraneous. So, you know, I think that was part of what I'm struggling with as far as, you know, the question and, you know, whether it, you know, whether focusing just on thin data right now is the right approach. But you know, I guess that's more the point I was trying to make. Thank you.
So to follow up on that, Mark, this is Chuck again. If we as a working group can identify legitimate purposes for each of these thin data elements, okay, do you have any problem with them being displayed publicly?
Now, again, does publicly mean there can't be any controls on it in front of it? I think you're saying we can have, you know, we're still open to having controls on it, right?
What do you mean by controls? Is it gate only some people can have access? I'm going back to the expert working group and the way they dealt with it. The expert working group, and somebody from the expert working group helped me out here. If they identified some data, I believe, that wouldn't be gated. Okay, everybody could see it with, you know, certain logistical constraints and so forth. Other data would be controlled; would be only certain certified people would be able to see it. That's what I'm getting at. Anybody from the
And I think Chuck,
this is Paul Keating. I'm sorry to barge in, but this is Paul Keating. I see the difference there's a limitation on accessibility for commercial reasons. I don't want someone to scrape my database, okay? As opposed to other restrictions, which are, I want to know if you have an appropriate purpose for asking, okay?
Yes.
That's
well
kind
put.
Of what I see the difference of being here. And so I would... Maybe you could reframe the question to the speaker in that regard so we don't get too far afield.
Did that make sense, Mark?
All right, so I'm mute. So I guess another question, you know, let me make sure I understand the you know, I believe the recommendation of the EWG was to do away with unlimited anonymous public access. Am I correct in saying that? Okay. Then I think, I agree with the EWG report, right? And so, you know, if your question is should these data elements be public, then I'm going to say no. I'm going to say I agree with the EWG report that recommends getting rid of unlimited anonymous public access to the data.
Yeah, but we're not in disagreement there, but the question, what we're really trying to find out, for thin data elements, should there be unlimited access to those? And you're saying no, the thin data elements.
That's correct.
Okay, all right, well, we'll accept that. And Theo's saying the same thing. Let's let a couple people talk. Andrew, go ahead.
Hi there, it's Andrew Sullivan again. I seem to be talking a lot today, I'm sorry. There has been some of this discussion has suggested that the only people who need access to some of these data elements are people who are in some sense related to the domain name itself. So, you know, the created on or expired on or expiry date or whatever, you know, you can look that up another way. But actually, other operators of infrastructure on the Internet can't look it up another way. That's the reason we have this service. So the purpose of this service originally was to enable, you know, the disconnected parts of the Internet who have no prior contractual relationship to one another to look one another up, and that's different from the phone system. So the reason that we have this service is precisely so that people can say, hey, wait a minute, this site isn't working and I need to contact the people and I'm an operator of some other infrastructure and so I have a way to look that up. And as far as I can tell, there's nothing in the thin WHOIS data, and that includes the referral URLs, because despite the fact that lots of people are not using thin systems anymore, it's there in support of the operation of the infrastructure. So I think a friendly amendment is to say, do you agree that whatever the thin data is, if it is necessary for somebody to operate infrastructure on the internet, then you know that is acceptable as public access. And then maybe we can have an argument about whether you know the created on date is really necessary, or you know the referral URL is really necessary if you're running thin infrastructure or whatever. But the point is that all of this stuff is necessary for somebody to run some infrastructure on the internet, and I think that's the reason that it should be ungated public access.
Thanks, Andrew. Paul?
Andrew, I'm sorry, but what you just defined was an example of gatedness. Okay, I have to show a reason for access to the information, which is contrary to what the whole—I'm sorry—but the concept, the question at issue is: should anybody and their uncle, for whatever reason, because today's Tuesday, I want to see it, I get to see it. That's the question. Okay, I'm sorry, but that's as clear as I could try and make it, and I apologize for being aggressive. Okay, in my the volume of my voice. Okay. But we are discussing here status, creation date, expiration date, name server, whether it's when was it last updated, and what is the location of the registrar who is. That's what I wrote down when the definition was in front of me on the screen. It's no longer in front of me, but I would like it to be, if staff could put it back up on the screen, I think it would be very helpful for the conversation. Okay? Those are the items, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the registrar, 8 items that we're talking about for thin whois. That's all we're talking about here. Okay? Now, I will tell you that as a lawyer, I use just about every single one of these every other day. When I buy or sell a domain name, I want to know when it's been changed. I want to know when the last update is. I want to add that to my historical whois records. I want to know what is happening to this domain name so I can tell my client whether or not they're dealing with the actual owner or not. I want to know where the name server is pointed to. I want to know when it's last been updated. I want to know who the registrar is because my client may have a claim, and they might want to know whether they have to go to India to deal with an issue or whether they're dealing with it in California or Spain, where I'm presently located. Okay? I want to know when the expiration date has occurred. When was it created? When was it created? It's important when it was created. Is it pre-existing a trademark claim or not? Okay. These are all vitally important statistical data sets that have no personal identifiable information in them at all, which is the only issue with the privacy directive in the European Union. It is personally identifiable information that those laws
deal with. Okay, I'm going to have to cut it off because we're out of time.
Okay.
Thanks, Paul. And sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
I think we're trying to be so precise.
No.
No, I'm not talking to what you're saying. I'm really talking to Mark and Theo. We're trying to be so precise, and I'm not sure it's adding value to helping us reach consensus. If I could believe that it was adding help constructive and meaningful distinctions that we're making that will make a difference in terms of where we're heading, I'd feel a lot more comfortable. I'm just not seeing the added value of being so precise. But we can't continue the discussion now. We're out of time. We will continue it in our next meeting. And hopefully we'll come up with some ways maybe to put a wrap on this better than we have today. My questioning certainly hasn't succeeded in that regard, but maybe the rest of the leadership team can help me figure out what to do, or if any of you have ideas, that's fine. But I'm really not seeing this being a very constructive discussion in terms of helping us to reach some sort of a decision in terms of what data could be displayed to anybody without qualification versus that. And whether it's needed or not, does that matter? As long as there's no harm, as long as there's no laws broken, as long as we can come up with a legitimate purpose? I don't know. It's not making sense to me why we would spend so much time on this, but we'll keep trying. Lisa, you had your hand up. Please jump in. I don't know what happened to Adobe here. It seems to disappear for me, but go ahead, Lisa.
Thanks, Chuck. Lisa Pfeiffer for the record. My takeaway from what I'm hearing from this discussion is that we're still struggling with the sort of highly interdependent, and unfortunately that means iterative, nature of the questions that are in front of us. The reason that the process framework laid purpose out first was so that we could hopefully reach some agreement on what the legitimate purposes were, then go to data elements and look at the data required for that group of purposes, and then go to the question of access and determine whether access would be public or something other than public for each of those data elements. So that was sort of a waterfall model in the process framework. I think what we're struggling with here is that by jumping ahead to access, I hear Mark struggling with, well, is there a purpose for some of this data in the first place? We're just going to have to break off a smaller piece, make some working assumptions, and then try to answer that question. If we continue to try to answer all three or four of these questions at the same time, we're going to continue to spin. I guess any feedback on how we can break this apart in a way that we can take one small piece and try to answer that one small piece and use it as a building block would be really welcome.
Thanks, Lisa. Well, we're over time. Our next meeting will be at the same time next Tuesday. We will continue. I welcome discussion and encourage discussion on the list in the meantime. Anybody that can help me understand the value of the concern, does it really matter? The things that we met in the long run in terms of our bigger objectives, does being this fine, I mean, if you can, I'd love you to help me understand how this is helping us by getting to this fine detail in terms of whether it's needed or whether it can be obtained somewhere else, or, I mean, I'm all for dealing with real issues. I haven't heard any issues that were very convincing to me in terms of not displaying any of this data that makes a difference. So please, if you have suggestions there, let me know. It doesn't mean what you said was wrong. I'm just not sure it's helping us, and that's where I'm struggling. So anybody that can help me understand that, I welcome that. Lisa and staff, the other vice chairs, anything else we need to cover today? My Adobe screen's gone blank, so I'm not seeing anything on that.
Chuck, this is Lisa Pfeiffer. I just put a link in chat to the current version of the working draft, which we added a new Section 5 on access. And I really think it might be helpful for those on this call to go have a look at that new Section 5 and, in particular, the EWG text that tried to tackle some of these same questions. Not necessarily that the answers are going to be the answers this working group comes up with, but it really might help to gel the concepts that were raised today by taking a look at that and how at least that group chose to tease apart the problem.
And, Lisa, that might be a good place to start next week.
Yes, it might be.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Anything else? Well, thanks, everybody. And we will pick up there next week and on the list in the meantime. Meeting adjourned, and the recording can stop.